Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Sewage overflow is a problem in the United States. The EPA estimates that some 75,000 sewers overflow every year, contaminating U.S. waterways. In Columbus, public utility officials adopted a plan nearly 15 years ago to address the issue, opting to expand capacity. But the city has changed course. Now planners believe rain gardens are a faster and cheaper way to reduce the amount of stormwater that gets into the sewer in the first place. With us right now, Leslie Westerfeldt. She is a spokeswoman for Blueprint Columbus with the City of Columbus Department of Public Utilities. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
So Blueprint is the name of the program that is now redirecting the water versus changing the capacity of the system.
Right. So the original plan was to build a large capacity tunnel to handle the overflow events when we have those. And those really only happen during wet weather events. And so essentially, we would have spent about $2 billion on a tunnel that really only would have been used a few times a year. And so with Blueprint, what we're doing is we're really trying to address the source of the problem by attacking the infrastructure that is currently failing us and allowing the overflows to happen.
Was the tunnel idea another stage in the previous plan? Because that was 15 years ago. Had nothing been done or there had been no steps taken in that direction?
So the wet weather management plan that we developed in 2005 was addressing both sanitary sewer overflows and combined sewer overflows. So in our central city, we've got a combined sewer, which means stormwater and wastewater go into the same system. And we were having overflow events with both of those. And we actually had two consent orders from the Ohio EPA saying, you got to do something about this. And so the 2005 plan included a tunnel for CSOs and combined sewer overflows and sanitary. The combined sewer overflow tunnel, which we call ORS, is in implementation. So it's actually active right now, and that was being developed while Blueprint was being planned.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Leslie Westerfeldt. She's a spokeswoman for Blueprint Columbus. That's within the City Department of Public Utilities, and that's the arm of city government that's managing the sewer overflow or the stormwater overflow issue for the city. That's what we're talking about this hour. We're going to get to rain gardens as well. Coming up later, we'll be glad to hear what you have to say about Blueprint Columbus. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What's causing the overflow? Is it aging infrastructure? Is it changing weather? Is it a combination? Too many people? What's up?
So ultimately, overflows are usually caused by aging infrastructure. So when we did our research to kind of delve into this problem more, what we found was that in our residential neighborhoods and our oldest residential neighborhoods, people's pipes are usually made out of clay. And, you know, as a homeowner, you don't think about replacing those unless you have a problem.
You avoid it at all costs.
Exactly. Because it is very expensive.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is those clay pipes, over time, they are degrading. And so there are cracks, tree roots break through, things like that. And so when it rains, that rainwater was seeping into our sanitary system. And those pipes really weren't built to handle both sanitary water and rainwater. And so that's what was causing the overflow during those high rain events.
Is there an increase in high rain events that is part of this equation?
Well, 2018 was the wettest year that Columbus has seen. And so I think that, we're definitely seeing trends towards that. All the more reason why it's a really great opportunity to rehabilitate the current infrastructure that we have now, instead of just building, larger new infrastructure that doesn't actually address the source of the problem.
The you said a $2 billion tunnel versus I think the city's spending about $80 million?
$80 million is just our one project area. So the first area that we have implemented is in Clintonville. And so for us to do both the rain gardens and the rehabilitative infrastructure work is going to be $80 million for that one project area. Across all 21 project areas that we've got throughout the city, we are going to be spending about $2 billion. And so there's not necessarily a huge cost difference between the two options, but But with the blueprint plan, we are able to use local or regional contractors, local material suppliers, local nurseries for the rain gardens, also developing a local workforce to maintain these rain gardens after they're built. And so really, the biggest difference between these two plans is that blueprint keeps that $2 billion in our economy. Whereas if we were going to build a larger tunnel, we would have had to outsource that to other states or other countries, really, and bringing those people in because it's highly specialized equipment and diggers and things like that. And so that money would have flown straight out of the Columbus economy, probably never to return.
And then also, when it comes to the rain gardens, how do they present a different sort of approach to this kind of problem?
So the other benefit that Blueprint has, because we're using green infrastructure, is we have the opportunity to improve the water quality in our rivers and streams. So the tunnel would have, you know, solved the issue of sewer overflows, mm-hmm. but it would not have done anything to really improve water quality overall. So one of the things that we found was about 65% of the pollution or the water impairment in the Olentangy River is actually caused by street pollution. And that's because when that water runs down the street, it's picking up trash, motor oil, all kinds of pollutants, sending them into the storm sewers. And the storm sewers discharge that untreated into our rivers and streams.
So the idea is to change that the direction of the water from going down against our curbs to going through our soil.
Yes. I mean, so anytime that we can mimic nature and use natural filtration processes, that is always ideal and the goal that we are striving for. So the rain gardens will filter that stuff out, make sure that it's not getting into the rivers and streams. And also it slows down the water. And so when we have those really heavy rain events where the water is really gushing, the rain gardens will provide an opportunity to hold that water, filter it, slow it down so that it's not overwhelming our system and causing other overflow events.
What have you learned from how other cities are responding to the overflow problem? Because as I mentioned at the top of the hour, as many as something like 50 to 75,000 times a year, there are overflows across the country.
Columbus is not unique in this problem, certainly. And so there are cities all over that are implementing either components of our current blueprint plan or, you know, looking at other strategies. Green infrastructure is something, though, that is becoming a more widely used tool, not only for sanitary sewer overflows like we're using, but also for combined sewer overflows. Because once again, it slows that water down so that when it's raining a lot, we're not overwhelming the system. We're keeping it, you know, at its appropriate capacity.
How much can you enumerate how many of the you know, like the tiles have been replaced, the clay tiles from the homes to the streets, how many downspouts have been redirected, that kind of a thing?
So we are currently in the middle of those what we call private property improvements in our first blueprint area, which is Clintonville. So by the time it's done, we're going to have close to 3,000 homes that have been evaluated and then you know, we can count individual downspouts and individual laterals. And the laterals are the pipes that carry the sanitary waste away from your house to the city system. So right now we're, you know, I can tell you what we're planning on doing, but we're in the middle of that right now. We are, though, ultimately, throughout those 21 blueprint project areas, we're going to be touching about 50,000 homes by the time this whole thing is done.
Why did you pick Clintonville first?
So one of the primary reasons is because Clintonville, that neighborhood is feeding to a sanitary sewer overflow that discharges into the Adena Brook. This is a highly recreated area, and so it's an area where you really don't want sewer overflows happening.
Where is Adena Brook?
So Adena Brook, this the overflow point would be kind of behind Whetstone Park.
Okay. Gotcha. Yep.
And so really, it was really the location of that overflow and the fact that, you know, a lot of people play near and in that stream that made us want to just kind of address that one first.
And then did I read correctly that Linden's next?
Yeah, we're going to be breaking ground in Linden next year. And then also then we'll be moving to the Hilltop area and the Near East Side. We call that area Miller-Kelton.
And these are all places with old infrastructure, old homes, lots of trees, that kind of a thing, right?
Yes. If you look at our map, what you'll see is all of the blueprint areas are really kind of in this big circle around the city, and they do represent some of our oldest neighborhoods. I mean, so 100-year homes who have not had their infrastructure touched probably since it was put in the ground.
What about the center of the city? It's pretty much pavement and cement, parking lots, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Are you going to address that at any point?
So in the center of the city, we have the combined sewer system. And so those are different challenges than Blueprint is kind of specifically trying to address. So with the combined sewer overflows, what we did was we built that large diameter tunnel, really, you know, in part because that tunnel had already really been started when we started thinking about how could we do this differently. Mm-hmm. And then also there's a lot of volume needed downtown, probably in part because of all of the pervious services that you're referring to. And so, you know, we needed 60 million gallons capacity, right? To and so really a tunnel was probably the best solution for that. We decided that that was the right way to go. There are rain gardens downtown, though, that you can see. So you can look on Gay Street or Town Street. Along Coastside, there are some rain gardens and some bioretention facilities. And so there are green infrastructure elements there to help with that water treatment.
Last year, folks in Clintonville, I think it was in November, I read an article by Mark Fiorenczyk in the Columbus Dispatch that folks in Clintonville weren't happy with how the blueprint plan was being implemented. Mm-hmm. What were the initial concerns and how has the city responded?
Sure. I think that this is a new project for the city and for a lot of cities. And so when we first started down this path, we were treating it like other sewer projects that we had done. And typically, especially the Department of Public Utilities, we are we're putting pipes in the ground and we're covering everything back up and, you know, nobody is necessarily the wiser.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
And this is really different because we're building infrastructure in people's neighborhoods. It's above ground. And it does change, you know, the landscape of a neighborhood. And so I think that in hindsight, I think that we have learned a lot about how to communicate what this entails, what it's going to look like, what it means for a neighborhood, and, you know, really trying to have those kinds of conversations with people earlier and more frequently during our process. So when we go into a neighborhood, you know, when we start surveying, we want to start talking to people about this. We want to start getting feedback and understanding what their concerns are. We've also, in Clintonville, you know, based on the feedback that we've gotten, have implemented different design changes to some of the rain gardens tried to enhance those. I think also this year, because the flowers have started to come into bloom and because, you know, some of these are looking nicer, you know, they will kind of become an asset to neighborhoods. And so I'm very grateful to the people of Clintonville for kind of, you know, being our first area and kind of walking through some of these lessons learned with us. And we are constantly trying to improve and be responsive to people's feedback.
We're talking about the city's 2015 Blueprint Columbus plan. My guest is Leslie Westerfeld. She's a spokeswoman for Blueprint Columbus. It's within the City Department of Public Utilities. We're going to continue our conversation about this strategy of lowering the amount of overflow that goes into the pipes, that goes into the waterways, and cleaning it along the way. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown, and we are the hosts of Snollygoster, WOSU's podcast all about politics in Ohio.
Each week, we chat about what the shrewd politicians at the State House are up to and how national politics affects us here at home.
Find out why listeners have called us a weekly must-listen. For a lighthearted yet in-depth look at Ohio politics, subscribe to Snollygoster wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Sewage overflow is a problem in the United States. The EPA estimates that some 75,000 sewers overflow every year, contaminating U.S. waterways. In Columbus, public utilities officials adopted a plan nearly 15 years ago to address the overflow issue. At that time, they were thinking about expanding capacity, but they've changed course. Now they think rain gardens, among other strategies, are a faster and cheaper way to reduce the amount of stormwater that gets into the sewer in the first place. Still with us is Leslie Westerfeld. She is a spokeswoman for Blueprint Columbus. That's the plan. That's within the City Department of Public Utilities. Amy Dutt is owner-partner of Scioto Gardens. That's a retail store for water gardens and a board member of Appalachia Ohio Alliance, a water conservation organization. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne.
And Jay Martin is a professor of ecological engineering at Ohio State. He studies the effectiveness of rain gardens for the city. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Jay, how are you studying the rain gardens? What are you looking at?
We're looking at five components of Blueprint Columbus. So two of those focus mostly on water. So we're looking at the ability to reduce the stormwater runoff. So looking at the volume of stormwater runoff coming off the landscape. We're also looking at water quality. So within stormwater, there's nutrients, there's hydrocarbons, there's sediments. Green infrastructure has been shown to reduce those. So those are two components we're looking at. This is such an ambitious project with over 400 rain gardens being installed that we also think it's going to impact the habitat within the community. So we're looking at habitat creation and the impact that's going to have on the insect communities and the bird communities. We're also looking at the impact on the community itself. So we're doing surveys of residents to find out.
You mean the emotional impact? Or
could be emotional impact. It could be behavioral changes. So okay. It could be learning. So are residents learning more about the water cycle and how water cycles through a landscape? Are they changing their behaviors around water? Are they washing their cars more or less? Are they taking longer, shorter showers? We don't know if this is going to have an impact on that. We also just want to know, how are they responding? Do they like the green infrastructure? Do they not like it? How could we change things to perhaps have them like it more or less? So that's another component. And then the last component is economics. So what is the impact on housing values is a important topic related to green infrastructure. So when you put these in a neighborhood, do the home prices go up? Do they go down? Do they stay the same? So we're tracking that over time as well.
All right, let's cut to the chase. What about home value? Is it increasing it or is it harming it?
I can't answer that question right now. So this is a five-year study. So getting that number is incredibly complicated. So as you know, if you're a home buyer, there's a lot of other things that impact the values of a house, the number of bathrooms, the square footage, and things like that. So over time, the idea is we can use statistical methods to control for that and isolate the impact of the green infrastructure. Since the green infrastructure has only been in for a couple of years, there's been a limited number of homes that have changed hands. So the idea is that after 5 years, we should be able to better answer that question.
And that makes sense. Are there any places in the country that can educate us about that?
No, we looked at that.
It's that new everywhere.
Yeah, it's a new topic, and we're hopefully going to be with some of the first people to weigh in on that. So I can't answer that right now.
Of the 400 rain gardens that are planned for the Clintonville area alone, right?
That's right.
How many are installed now?
They're all installed.
Oh, they're all installed. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Have you learned anything about whether there's a decrease in runoff?
Yeah, I can make a comment on that. So we do have some preliminary analysis that shows that the rain gardens are effective at reducing stormwater volume. And the way we're doing that is we have a control watershed that's north of Clintonville in the Beachwald area that's not having rain gardens installed. So we're tracking the runoff from that area. We're also tracking it within the areas where rain gardens are installed. So we have a control and treatment watersheds.
Why did you pick that area for the control?
Because it's very similar to the neighborhoods in Clintonville. So we wanted to pick a landscape, residential, same type of tree cover, so we could compare them equally. And so what we find out is when we look at 2017, both of these watersheds had about a quarter of the rainfall that fell on that watershed ran off. So for every inch, a quarter inch runs off. In 2018, if you'll remember, it was the wettest year we've ever had in Columbus. So in the control, that fraction of runoff went from a quarter to about a third. But in the treatment area where we had the rain gardens, that number didn't move at all. It moved very little. So we would have expected it to go up to a third just like it did in the control. But with the rain gardens, it stayed flat.
And it went up, the proportion or the fraction went up because it gets to a tipping point where you're going to lose more and more.
That's right. You know, in 2018, it was the biggest rainfall event we had, which I stated earlier. The soils get saturated, so you have that fraction goes up over time. You just can't absorb any more water on that landscape. But in the areas with green infrastructure, we were able to absorb more water in the landscape.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the city of Columbus's plan to manage, overflows, sewer overflows, stormwater runoff overflows. My guest you just heard is Jay Martin. He's an Ohio State University professor of ecological engineering, and he's studying the plan that the city has implemented for starters in Clintonville. They'll also move to Linden, the Hilltop, and other areas. Also with us, Leslie Westerfeld. She's a spokeswoman for Blueprint Columbus. That's within the Department of Public Utilities. And Amy Dutt is an owner partner of Scioto Gardens and a board member at Appalachia Ohio Alliance. Amy Dutt, what is a rain garden? What's the definition?
A rain garden is the inverse of a normal garden with a raised bed. It's a concave bed that, planted with vegetation, will hold water and absorb it into the ground within 48 hours.
And for the purposes of what they're doing in Columbus, I mean, how big does it have to be? Could it fit in this, you know, in a bread box kind of a thing? How do you describe it to people?
Think of your roof, probably about 1/6 the size of your roof would manage the runoff from your roof.
Okay. All right. So that's for an everyday home.
For an everyday home, if you take your roof and your parking lot, your driveway, if you convert 1/6 of your open space into a rain garden, you can manage all the runoff that would have been managed by open land before.
Okay. And for the purposes of the city, what's the typical rain garden look like, Leslie Westerfeld?
So we have several different designs of the rain gardens that we implement. And really, which design is used is dependent on the neighborhood infrastructure.
Okay.
As Amy was talking about, the way that we decide how big these are and where these need to be located are based on us calculating the roof size and then also calculating how much water we expect to redirect out to the street once we do the lateral lining and the downspout redirection. So when we do our surveying, we already know where water is naturally collecting and where it naturally flows. That determines the location. And then how much water we expect to have coming on the street. So the current conditions plus what we're adding is how we determine how big they need to be.
Are these going on people's property?
No. These are all in the city-owned right-of-way. But the right-of-way extends for a lot of people. If you don't have a sidewalk, it could be as much as 11 to 15 feet up into your yard. And that's not necessarily something that a lot of us are thinking about.
Huh. Okay. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation about how the city's managing overflow, 614-292-8513. And Brittany in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Brittany.
Hello. I'm calling. I live in the beach-walled area of Clintonville, which mm-hmm. is towards the northern edge. Mm-hmm. And I'm calling because our rain gardens that are installed throughout our neighborhood in this area of Clintonville look significantly different than what is being broadcasted, what is being shown by Blueprint Columbus. So I would like to know why they have chosen to install landscaped, attractive gardens in the central area of Clintonville, but left the rest of us with these incredibly large, deep concrete basins that appear to have been chosen simply by the contractor due to price as a measure to save money instead of how it looks in our neighborhood.
Okay. I guess Leslie Westerfeld.
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, cost is not was not necessarily a driving factor with those. In the area where we've got these four-walled basins, which is what Brittany is referring to, what was happening there is the right-of-way was very restricted. And so we had to maximize the limited space that we had. And so those rain gardens are, they allow us to capture a lot more water because we've got four walls instead of slope designs. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, what we have definitely learned is that is certainly not the preferred design in the community. It is not a tool that we're taking out of our toolbox, though, because while, you know, in other areas maybe that have more concrete around them or things like that, you know, different designs work in different places. And so the team is currently working on trying to figure out how we can make these more attractive. They, admittedly, they seem deep, but the depth of them is really for the water control.
They seem dangerous.
I mean, we have vetted that depth with other departments, and we talked about it at length. But, you know, I definitely understand, you know, the perception. And like I said, we're looking at ways to make those not seem so stark in the landscape.
Is there fencing around them?
There is not fencing around them, no. No, but there is a 6-inch raised curb. So the idea is that you shouldn't necessarily be able to just walk into them.
Okay. And does it retain water for a long time?
It retains more water because we're able to hold it. So if you think about, like Amy said, a rain garden is an inverted raised bed. With these, they essentially have a flat bottom and then walls. And so we can capture more water because we're not dealing with basically a triangle. We're dealing with a square now.
Right. Amy Dutt, I kind of think of rain gardens as kind of pretty. I see what they're doing in our neighborhood, not the city, because I'm not in the city of Columbus, but they go along the driveways and they're stoned and there's some plantings, but they look really pretty.
Yes, they can. And you can put trees or shrubs, or a lot of people put the perennials that look a little wild and woolly, but you can design it with whatever aesthetic that you want.
Does it matter, Jay Martin, what kind of water garden you have? I mean, when you're studying them, how are you accounting for the different kinds?
The design will definitely affect how it functions. So one of the key things in the design is to ensure that the rain garden drains within 48 hours, as Amy mentioned earlier. So one of the concerns a lot of residents have is about mosquitoes. Mm. But most of the gardens that go in are put in with an under drain, so we can ensure that that garden drains within 48 hours so we can eliminate any possibility of mosquitoes breeding. Looking at this, just the depth you have to store water, as Leslie was talking about earlier, that's another important factor as to how much water these rain gardens can actually hold and how effective they can be at reducing water and improving water quality. The vegetation can also make a difference. So there's prairie plants that are sometimes put in that have deeper roots that can encourage infiltration of the water over time.
It can be there for drought periods.
Yep, can be there for drought periods and access water down low. Trees, bushes are also important because one way you can increase the function of a rain garden is through evapotranspiration. So you're not only losing water down into the groundwater, but you can lose it up into the air as a tree transpires water. So if you can have vegetation, it can make a difference. And then when you start thinking about habitat as well and impacts on insects and birds, the types of vegetation you have in there really makes an impact on that too. So the design, the physical design, what type of soil is involved and what type of vegetation is selected does make a difference for sure.
You know, when you decide what kind of – one of the things you've learned from Clintonville is when you decide what kind of rain garden to put in, you spend time talking with the residents that are going to live near it?
Yes. So, you know, moving forward in Clintonville, before we did this, we did have 9 public meetings. But again, I think that, you know, people get invited to public meetings a lot. And if you don't really understand what it was that we were trying to talk about, you know, why would you come? And so I recognize that. But I think that, you know, moving forward, what we're doing is we are talking to residents about the different designs and also why the designs that we are offering in neighborhood are chosen, because I think that's a really critical point.
Okay, so Brittany, thank you a lot for that call. I want to turn to Jeff now in Clintonville. You're on the air. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. I live in the heart of the rain gardens and have watched them grow. And my question is, you have crews out there like 4 times a year to maintain the rain gardens. And the rumor is that after 2 to 3 years, it's going to become the owner's responsibility for the upkeep. And if that's true, how would you expect a 87-year-old widow on a fixed income to possibly maintain the rain garden? Hmm.
So what is the plan, Leslie Westerfeldt, for maintaining the gardens over time?
So I want to make this very clear. The residents are never expected to maintain these rain gardens. So these rain gardens, because as Dr. Martin said, they have under drains that connect to our storm sewer, they are now a part of our storm sewer infrastructure. So they are city property. They are our responsibility. And so we are maintaining them forever, right, in perpetuity. The maintenance, actually, the minimum schedule is once a month. And so those we have crews out there weeding, checking the plant health, checking the under drain to make sure that it's not clogged, making sure that we're clearing out trash and other debris so that it drains and functions the way that it's intended.
Yeah. What about rain gardens? I think sometimes people think, well, they aren't going to need that much maintenance. They're different than a traditional garden. Amy Dutt, what about that when you're advising people on rain gardens?
There is no no-maintenance garden.
The definition
even,
of a garden
even concrete
maintenance.
Needs right. maintenance every once in a while. But it's just like a regular garden where you're going to be weeding, cutting back vegetation, making sure that the plants are healthy. But you're also looking for things to make sure that the soil doesn't get clogged up, like a buildup of sediment or leaves, something that's going to turn into fines and gum up the works and make that they don't drain. You're looking to remove leaves and sediment that builds up as well.
And what about if people want to help maintain the water gardens? Is there an opportunity for that to improve them aesthetically, perhaps?
We would prefer that folks don't plant their own plants in these rain gardens. We don't want people walking in them. So the soil that we use, we call it a biosoil, which essentially it's a mixture of soil and sand, mm-hmm. and that's what allows that drainage. If people are walking on these or working in them, you're just hastening the compaction of that soil, which reduces the drainage capacity. And so we definitely encourage people to reach out if they have ideas about, things that they would like to see in there. We try to include the input of the homeowners in the plants that we put into a rain garden that's near their house. But we don't want people to kind of be taking over ownership of them themselves.
Well, let me get to a call real quick here. By the way, Jeff, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. And now I'm going to turn to Brenda in Clintonville. You're on the air. Brenda, hi.
Hello there. And Leslie has been wonderful to work with, by the way. We have a rain garden in front of our house. And she was really helpful in working through some of the issues.
Brenda, tell us what it looks like.
At the moment, it actually came out. I mean, it is one of the big, ugly coffin crypt type style. It was hideous to begin with. Mm-hmm. The plantings have come along, and they actually look quite pretty right now. But in talking to the people, there were people here recently doing work in the rain gardens. They are tending them. But the plants that are in there are soon to be, cut back for fall, to just as you would with fall plants, just mm-hmm. chop them all off of the ground. And that is the issue I have with these rain gardens, why there cannot be some sort of plantings put in there, little junipers or some sort of low-lying evergreen shrubs, so that they're not hideous 6 months out of the year. Realistically, we live in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
And in the summer, when they're in bloom, yes, they are pretty. And as the plants mature and things every year, they're going to get prettier mm-hmm. during the summer. But from November through April, at least May, they're just going to be these big, ugly coffin crypt type bunkers in front of our homes. I even volunteered to buy my own plants and put in. And as she said, they don't want homeowners in there. And it's actually somebody at some point stated that that's, criminal vandalism of public property if I install my own plants.
Yeah.
So
I'm
not going to do that.
Yeah.
So
let me ask Leslie Westerfeldt what are your plans for beautification?
So that is actually one thing. I mean, we've heard that from the community loud and clear. And the winter, you know, these definitely don't look as good. And so we're actually working with our horticulturalists right now to find plants that would have a winter interest, but still, you know, maintain the functionality of this and make sure that they're natives and things like that. So that is something that we are actively looking at right now and hoping to implement soon.
When Brenda's talking about coffin crypt-like, is that the idea? Is it one of those cement?
It's one of the four-walled basins that has the flat bottom.
Okay. And so, when we're talking, it's like something you'd lower a coffin into, supposedly. I guess, is that what she's describing? Because when I was reading about coffin descriptions, I thought it looked like a coffin up above ground.
So the four walls, it's a, on the outside, on the grass side, there's a 6-inch curb. But then, you know, the wall itself is much deeper than that.
Yeah.
The bottom of it is 12 to 18 inches below the top of the curb. So, so it has a concrete rim around it, and It's a description being used.
Brenda, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. We welcome other calls. We're talking about the strategy that the city of Columbus has employed. It's called Blueprint Columbus, and it's how to manage overflow into the sewers and into the rivers and streams and lakes of Ohio. You just heard from Leslie Westerfeldt. She's a spokeswoman for Blueprint Columbus. It's within the city's Department of Public Utilities. Also with us is Ohio State Professor of Ecological Engineering, who's studying the program, Jay Martin, and Amy Dutch. She's an owner partner at Sciota Gardens. That's a water garden business, retail, the retail level. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The EPA estimates that some 75,000 sewers overflow every year in the United States, and all that overflow is contaminating our waterways. In Columbus, public utilities officials have adopted a plan some 15 years ago to address the overflow issue. The option there was to expand capacity, which they did in part, but the city has also changed course. And planners now believe that rain gardens, among other strategies, are a faster and cheaper way to reduce the amount of stormwater that gets into the sewer in the first place. Still with us is Leslie Westerfeldt. She's a spokesman for Blueprint Columbus. That's the plan within the city Department of Public Utilities. Jay Martin is an Ohio State University professor of ecological engineering, and he's studying the effectiveness of rain gardens. And Amy Dutt is owner-partner of Sciota Gardens. That's a native plant nursery. And she also is a board member at Appalachia Ohio Alliance. If you have a question or comment about the plan, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Leslie Westerfeldt, what's the deal with the sump pumps? I mean, how many of those are going in? How do you decide where they're going? And is the resident paying for them?
So our sump pump program as part of Blueprint is another one of the strategies to get as much of that rainwater away from the home, away from that pipe, that sanitary waste pipe, and out to the street where we can control it. So anyone who lives within a Blueprint project boundary is eligible for a sump pump as long as they don't currently have a sump pump or haven't previously had a sump pump. And if they have a completely finished basement, that might pose some challenges. The program is 100% covered by the city. And so we will bring in the crew and the sump pump. We will do the installation. And then homeowners also get a backup battery and a 1-year warranty with it.
Okay. Let's get to some of these calls. Carol in Beechwald. You're on the air. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. I'm a resident of Old Beechwald, which is just north of Clintonville, and been involved with the meetings for Blueprint Ohio. And I have two questions. One is, I heard one of your speakers earlier said that Beechwald would not be getting rain gardens. It's my understanding we would. And the second question has to do with the plantings in the rain garden. Could stones, rocks be used in there that were attractive and perhaps dwarf conifers?
Okay.
I saw a list of approved plantings and nothing like that was included. So I will hang up and listen to the answer. Thank you.
Okay. Amy Dutt, could you address what works in a rain garden and what doesn't when it comes to plantings?
We have to choose plants that would handle the amount of inundation. So if it's going to have 6 inches of water for a day, there's a big variety of plants that would live in that. But if it's going to have 12 inches of water for a day, you've limited your selection to a dozen or two plants. If you add in the fact that you're going to have the salt in the winter coming off the road, then you've limited the selection. You can't use a juniper, for example, something that would die from salt. You might be able to use an eastern white cedar. So there, you choose plants that in the natural environment would be able to handle that kind of inundation. And that's how you choose your plant palette, based on the hydrology that you create in this garden.
And then Jay Martin at Ohio State, you mentioned earlier that you the control for your study is located in Beechwald. But yep. That doesn't mean that there aren't going to be any rain gardens in Beechwald.
That's correct.
Okay.
When we started the study, Beechwald wasn't planned at that time. I'm going to turn it over to Leslie to see about the future plans. But for us, we wanted to have an area, at least for a period of time, maybe 5 years, where there wasn't going to be green infrastructure so we could compare control and treatment.
So the area that Jay has identified as a control is, yes, it's part of Beechwald, but we do have an old Beechwald project. So it's a smaller subsection where they are dealing with a lot of drainage issues and stormwater issues. And so we are implementing a couple rain gardens and then also doing some storm sewer work in that area. But it is... there's a border between it. So for our purposes, we have an old Beechwald project area, but as far as the neighborhood is concerned, Beechwald is larger than our old Beechwald area.
Okay. And Dallas and Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Dallas.
Hi. How was it my question is, how was it decided what type of rain gardens would be placed in each area?
Okay.
For example, there are two separate styles on my street. One side of the street has bump outs and the other has them in the homeowner's yard.
Okay.
So there are a couple different ways that we decide how, you know, what style of rain garden to use. And there are bump out rain gardens, which are essentially curb extensions. There are also behind the curb rain gardens. And so that is really dependent on what kind of infrastructure is already in the right of way. So when you see a bump out, usually what's happened is that there is maybe a water main or a gas main or electrical lines in that right of way. And so we know that we need that location because we know water is going to collect there. We know that we need to manage it. But we can't put it necessarily behind the curb because it would require a lot of moving around of that critical infrastructure. Bump outs also, though, do have some calming, traffic calming effects. And so in some neighborhoods, you know, those are a welcome addition and maybe tie into other strategies that the city is using for traffic calming and things like that.
Jay Martin, has anybody noticed, or when you're talking to the community, has anyone noticed the overflow changing?
Yes, I gave a presentation two weeks ago at the Whetstone Library to residents from Clintonville, and there were several anecdotes about people standing at the end of the streets and noticing the impacts of the reduced runoff on a side with more rain gardens compared to a side with less rain gardens or no rain gardens on the other side. And I myself have done that in a rainstorm, stood at the end of Glenmont.
And it's visual. You can see it's
obvious.
It's definitely
visual. Yeah, you can see a lot more runoff on the side with no or less rain gardens compared to the side of the street with rain gardens.
Okay. Hey, by the way, Dallas, thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate it. Let's see. Stacy in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Ann. I have a question about the signage surrounding many of the gardens. That's actually what I find more of an eyesore. I understand some of the gardens are more attractive than others, but oftentimes we have white poles in front of them. Again, I understand, so that caution. But then there's a no parking sign in front of it and behind it to warn people not to park in the garden. And oftentimes across the street, there's also two no parking signs. So we can be at the top of the street looking down and now have as many as a dozen to two dozen additional no parking signs. My question was, how are those determined, and can that be in any way altered? Can we come up with a more pleasing way of deterring people from parking in the rain garden?
Leslie Westerfeld.
Sure. The no parking signs are really, especially when we're talking about bump outs, depending on the street width, sometimes it's important to make sure that people understand you really shouldn't be parking across from the bump out either, you know, to narrow it down. However, that is something that we have been reevaluating once again based on the feedback that we've gotten in Clintonville. And so we are going to be implementing some of the signage changes, even in Clintonville, as well as moving forward into our other areas. So that is something that we're working on, and hopefully we'll be able to reduce the number of signs that are out there right now.
Stacy, thanks a lot for that call. Steve in Old North Columbus. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
I'm calling to ask that, let's say we live outside of the Blueprint Columbus area. Is there a plan or their resources out there that we could, say, have somebody come to our own properties and give us a consultation on what is best to manage our own runoff, even though it may not necessarily be part of the formal Blueprint Columbus plans, but offer that resource to people outside of those defined lines?
Yeah, Leslie.
Yeah, I think that there are several different organizations out there that, you know, they are devoted to this idea of managing stormwater and making sure that we're all doing our part to naturally infiltrate as much as possible. So we work very closely with Franklin Soil and Water. There's the Central Ohio Rain Garden Initiative. Amy could probably list off maybe some other ones, or the watershed groups are also really great resources.
Yeah, the Flow. Right. Olentangy, yeah.
Right.
Well, Amy, have you noticed an increase in people like Stephen who are interested in rain gardens just from the ecological standpoint versus the city?
Yes, people will put them in, but it's the same kind of people that would spend money to put in a landscape anyway. But you can probably get a paid designer out for $150 to come do a design for you, and you can install it yourself with mm-hmm. your own plants. That's mm-hmm. the most cost-effective way. Franklin Soil and Water, in certain parts of Franklin County, will send out an urban ecologist to do a design for free based on where you live, if you're outside a jurisdiction.
I'd also like to add that Franklin Soil and Water also runs a program. It's called Community Backyards. And so that program offers workshops to homeowners so that they can learn more about stormwater management strategies on their property. And they also offer rebates for either native plants or trees or rain barrels and things like that.
A $50 voucher.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Stephen, thanks for that call. We do not have time for more calls. I appreciate everybody's interest. We'll follow up on this in the future. But before I let you go, Jay Martin, I'm wondering about water quality. We talked about, you're saying that you can observe how the runoff changes when there's water, when there's rain gardens present. What about water quality? Do we know yet?
We don't know yet. We don't have enough data. But looking at studies across the country, I would definitely expect increases in water quality. So we should see decreases in sediment, decreases in nutrients, decreases in hydrocarbons. We're also monitoring the microbes in the stormwater as well. I would expect to see decreases there too. But we don't have enough data to draw a conclusion at this point. But
And just real quick, Dallas called. She's obviously a youth. I'm wondering if the city is involving schools and kids in studying this.
Yeah, I'm actually going to turn that over to Jay. He did a very cool thing with Indianola Informal.
We just have about, 45 seconds to all the time
great.
In the world.
Yeah, so we've been working with Indianola Informal, working in their classroom. So I'm actually going there after this program where the students are going to build columns with soil and determine what's the best soil mix to hold the most amount of water. So we're studying that. And then later on this fall, the students are going to come out to one of the rain gardens in Clintonville. We're going to do a water test there. So the students will do some hands-on learning, do a report after that, and they can see the connection between how the rain gardens are reducing the amount of water reaching the Olentangy River. So it's been a really effective program.
Cool. Well, Jay Martin, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Jay Martin, Ohio State University professor of ecological engineering, is studying the effects of the Blueprint Columbus. Leslie Westerfeldt, spokeswoman for Blueprint Columbus. It's in the Department of Public Utilities in the city. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Amy Dutt, owner partner of Scioto Gardens, and it's a native plant nursery and board member of Appalachia Ohio Alliance. Thank you as well.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks to everybody else for listening. Appreciate your attention. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.